Sun's Week in All. Listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
Sporty greetings to all our Voice of America listeners. This is VOA's Sunny Young in Washington. Welcome to the November 13th edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Coming up on Monday's show, I'll chat with Prince Nesta about some of the weekend highlights in the major European club football leagues. Egyptian star Mo Salah hits a big goal-scoring landmark for Liverpool. Also, Samson Omale will have a report on the inaugural African Football League final. Iron Mike Mbonye will tell us about how Liberian basketball is hoping to dribble back into international competition. Those stories and much more on Monday's Sunny Side of Sports. Let's give a Sunny Side of Sports salute to Mama Lodi Sundowns. The Sundowns won the inaugural African Football League final, as we hear now from Samson Omale.
In Pretoria, South Africa, South African side Mamelodi Sundowns were crowned the first ever Africa Football League champions after a 2-0 second leg victory over Wydad Casablanca sealed a 3-2 aggregate triumph. Sundowns went into the home leg trailing 2-1 but turned the tie around thanks to goals from Peter Shilule and Aubrey Mudiba at the Rancros Loftus Versfeld Stadium in Pretoria. Coach Rulani Mukwena masterminded a tactical plan that overcame Wydad's early pressure before ruthlessly capitalizing on errors.
Congratulations to this amazing group of players. I'm just very lucky to be their coach. And congratulations to Mamelodi Sundowns. Congratulations. It's for the fans. It's for the Yellow Nation. It's for this magnificent group of players. God is good and God loves us all.
The triumph caps a historic continental triumph for Sundowns, who have now become the first champions of the new African Football League since lifting the CAF Super Cup 6 years ago.
Thanks, Samson. Joining us once again is Prince Nesta for a look at the weekend highlights in the major European club football leagues. Sporty greetings, Prince.
Sporty greetings, Sonny.
Prince, Mo Salah. Tell us about his heroics.
The Egyptian star netted twice to take his tally to 200 goals in English football after guiding his side Liverpool to a 3-0 win against Brentford in a match that was played at Anfield. Diogo Jota also scored for the Reds, signing off international break with a comfortable victory. Salah joins Newcastle legend Alan Shearer and former Arsenal talisman Thierry Henry as the only players in history to have scored or assisted in 15 consecutive Premier League home games. Liverpool boss Jurgen Klopp shared thoughts on his team's performance.
More than 20 years ago when I started my career, I wanted to be create a team which nobody wants to play against. And we face them today. It's crazy. You don't want to play against them. And then the wind and everything and the set pieces. This spell where they had six corners in a row or whatever. My God, I don't know how you get through this. It's really difficult. They are so good at that. But we defended with so much passion in that moment. Organization, yes, but you have to make sure you are there in the moment. The goals we scored were fantastic. All of them, the second goal we scored, the first goal I saw when nobody celebrated, in the end it counts. It's like, okay, that's different. Usually everybody's celebrating and then the goal doesn't count. So, but good, top goals, top performances.
That's Liverpool manager Jurgen Klopp speaking after his team's win against Brentford in the Premier League.
Prince, taking a look at the weekend results in the Premier League, the Gunners of Arsenal continue to enjoy a positive start to the 2023-2024 campaign.
That's right, Sonny. They did manage to record a 3-1 win over Burnley at the Emirates Stadium heading into the international break on a high. The Gunners took the lead right before halftime through Leandro Trossard's header, but Josh Brownhill had other plans, equalizing for Burnley early in the second half. French defender of Cameroonian descent William Saliba scored a header from a corner before Alexander Zinchenko volleyed home acrobatically to seal the deal. The victory means the Ghanas now have 27 points with just one defeat, while Burnley only has 4 points and sit at the bottom of the table. Arsenal boss Mikel Arteta shared thoughts on his team's performance.
Well, really happy with the result, but especially the performance after playing in 72 hours with the last three games. How we play against Newcastle, how we play against Sevilla, how we play today, how dominant we were against teams that is very difficult to dominate the amount of situation that we generated. I think we fully deserve to win the game. And with the red card, yes, thank you for asking me. VAR was right, the referee was right. Really good decision, really positive from Mikel to speak about that.
That's Arsenal head coach Mikel Arteta speaking after his team's win against Burnley in the Premier League.
Prince, still with the Premier League, an 8-goal thriller between Chelsea and rivals Manchester City at Stamford Bridge. How about some details, Prince?
Definitely a match for the ages, Sonny, as each of the teams settled for a point apiece in their epic Premier League encounter, which ended on a 4-all draw. Erling Haaland scored twice as Swiss footballer of Nigerian descent Manuel Akanji and Rodri added a goal each to extend Manchester City's position at the top of the Premier League. Thiago Silva, Raheem Sterling, Senegalese footballer Nicolas Jackson and Cole Palmer all hit the target as Chelsea moved up to 10th in the standings with 16 points. Here's Chelsea manager Mauricio Pochettino's thoughts on his team's performance.
I think, first of all, I think it's an amazing game. That is why the Premier League is the best on the world. And then so happy because very pleased with the performance of the player, and I think they deserve full credit. Facing a team like Manchester City, for me the best in the world, I think it's big credit for the player.
Manchester City boss Pep Guardiola also shared thoughts on the match.
Well, it was a good advert, entertainment game for the Premier League. Both teams want to win, so they start better. They have, but I couldn't expect differently. So they have fantastic players, a fantastic team already, and we know always they play good against top sides, Liverpool, Arsenal and so on, so we knew it. And after we took the game, and afterwards, it's difficult to say, okay, control, but we had the quality for him, from Cole, from Mudrik at the end, from, the Peppers, they have the ability to dribble and run, so at the end it's difficult to control the game. They were aggressive. But we have our momentum was when after 2-3, we have a two before the action from Cole, we have a 2 or 3 transitions, one against one, that could not finish because we are saying we're 98 minutes, never is over. But the game was in that moment, at the end was a tight game, I would say a 4 result. So I congratulate the team because they still are there. So we go international break with the top of the league, with qualify for the Champions League after where we come from is good, and we come back and go.
That's Manchester City manager Pep Guardiola speaking after his team's 4-all draw against Chelsea in the Premier League.
Prince, back-to-back Premier League victories for Manchester United.
That's right, Sonny. The Red Devils did manage to grind out a scrappy 1-0 win against Luton Town thanks to Victor Lindelof's 59th-minute strike, which effectively sealed their fourth win from their last 5 top-flight matches. Here's United boss Erik ten Hag's thoughts on his team's performance.
Today, we created a lot of chances. We had some problems with finishing, but in a moment it will come, and we will step across that line, and that makes life easier, that's clear.
That's Manchester United boss Erik ten Hag speaking after his team's win against Luton Town in the Premier League.
Prince, let's turn our attention to France now. Paris Saint-Germain back on top of the French League. Tell us about that, Prince.
That's right, Sonny. The Parisians climbed back to the summit of the French League thanks to their French star of Cameroonian descent, Kylian Mbappe's hat-trick, which sealed a 3-0 win against Reims. The win marked the 5th straight French League win for PSG, who are now a point above second-place Nice, who secured a 0-0 draw against Montpellier. Marseille suffered a 1-0 defeat in the hands of Lens, while Monaco also forced to a 0-0 draw against Le Havre.
Finally, in Spain, Prince, Real Madrid, such a proud club in La Liga. and they ran riot against Valencia. Tell us about that one, Prince.
For sure, Sonny, Vinicius Jr. and Rodrigo each scored twice as Dani Carvajal scored another to seal a 5-1 Los Blancos' victory against leaders Girona. In another fixture, Polish hitman Robert Lewandowski scored twice to help third-place Barcelona beat Alaves by 2-1. Axel Witsel, Antoine Griezmann and Samuel Lino all recorded their names on the score sheet to help fourth-place Atletico Madrid secure a 3-1 win against Villarreal. Reporting for the Sonny Side of Sports, I'm Prince Nestor.
Thanks, Prince. Always a delight to get your take on the weekend highlights in the major European club football leagues. Football was in mourning at the start of 2023. On January 3rd, international football legend Pelé was buried in Santos, Brazil. Pelé died December 29, 2022, after a battle with colon cancer. Pelé had fans all over the globe, including South Africa, where he crept into the hearts of millions of South Africans in the build-up to the 2010 World Cup hosted by the Rainbow Nation. Pelé supported an African bid to stage the tournament from the very beginning, encouraged by South Africa's first democratic president, Nelson Mandela. In this encore Sunny Side of Sports feature presentation, Darren Taylor reports Pelé made many friends during numerous visits to South Africa after apartheid ended in 1994.
Cruzou para trás, dominou, fez o passe do Pelé, furou, voltou, Pelé emendou lá dentro!
Augusto Palacios says he fell in love with football and with Pelé when he watched him score a hat-trick against France in the 1958 World Cup semi-final. His 8-year-old eyes gazed at the TV screen in awe as the 17-year-old Brazilian tormented the French. Pelé's team would go on to beat Sweden in the final, with Palacios later finding a place in the midfield of Peru's national team.
In 1973, I had an opportunity to play against him. And obvious, I meet him, obvious, in Argentina. In Buenos Aires, also, I meet him in, when I was the team manager, Mafana Afana, in the World Cup in France, and also in Confederation.
Palacios was 21 when he lined up for his Peruvian club, Sporting Cristal, against Pelé's Brazilian side, Santos, in a Copa Libertadores fixture. The Copa Libertadores is South America's equivalent of the African Champions League. Palacios says he was surprised by Pelé's relatively small stature.
His height was 1.73, but the way he jumped over the ball, looking at the goal he scored in 1970 against Italy, the heading goal, it was unbelievable. The body aspect, the strong with the ball to protect the ball and the dribbling, unbelievable. And remember also,
he laughs and says he couldn't touch Pelé on the field and had to make do with handshakes and back slaps off the pitch.
His background is unbelievable. He never lost this passion or humble aspect from where he came, because he came from very, very poor family. He was a very, very poor person, you know, who was selling a newspaper and magazine and clean shoes in the street. Age 13 years is when...
According to the Peruvian, it says a lot about the kind of person Pelé was that he chose to remain loyal to Santos rather than moving to a top European club. One can only imagine, says Palacios, what Pelé could have achieved with Real Madrid, for example. Yet, says Palacios, Pelé's name still became synonymous with the beautiful game, and he won every trophy he ever competed for.
5 Copa Libertadores, 2 Intercontinental Cup, 3 World Cup, top goal scorer, 1,000, 2,000 goal. He was my hero. I can't copy him, but I can enjoy watching him.
Another South African footballing personality who interacted with Pelé is Kaiser Motohong, the founder of top club side, Kaiser Chiefs.
In 1968, Motong was playing as a 24-year-old striker for Atlanta Chiefs in the United States.
Santos drove hard against the Chiefs to keep their lead. Paley, number 10, maintained his standing as the world's number one player.
Grainy archive footage shows Pele bursting through the Chiefs' defense to smash the ball into the net past an onrushing goalkeeper. Motong says he remembers almost every second of the game.
The occasion itself was unbelievable because we knew that we're not only playing against a team called Santos, we're playing against the greatest of all time.
He says the tens of thousands of fans in the stadium had obviously come to see Pele, and Pele only, and that was just fine by him.
They beat us 6-2, and he scored about three goals. I must say I was very happy because I also scored one goal in that game.
As a football administrator, Motong met Pele on many occasions, especially during the 2010 World Cup in South Africa.
He was an unbelievable character, on and off the field. But off the field, was such a humble person, you would not believe that he was a top athlete throughout the world and somebody who was seen as the best in the whole world.
Motong says of all the famous political figures, musicians, authors and sports people he's met, Pele remains the only one he places on the same pedestal as Mandela, a global icon, but with the humanity and humility to make everyone around him feel significant. For the Sunny Side of Sports, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
Thanks, Darren. Pele's impact and influence was big in South Africa and throughout the African continent, as we hear now from the chief football writer at ACLSports.com, Fisayo Dairo.
The whole of Africa saw Pele as one of their own. Being a black South American, they embraced him. He traveled down to the African continent a lot and lot of time. He came to Nigeria four times in the 60s and 70s. He came with Santos to play against Nigeria's Green Eagles in 1969 January, and he still came back a month later to play in Benin City. And then in 1976, Pele came to Ibadan in southwestern Nigeria to teach school children the art of playing football. And then 3 years later, in 1979, he was in Kaduna, northern Nigeria, where Santos also played against Raka Rovers. So it was an amazing feeling for those that were alive that time to welcome the legend. Africans see him as the greatest ever, undoubtedly the best that will ever be. And that's why even in Ghana, one of their greatest footballers, Abedi Ayew, was nicknamed Pele. So many people didn't know. You would have thought his name was Abedi Pele, as he was fondly called across Africa. That is the kind of influence that Pele held among Nigerians and our Africans, to be precise. His death, of course, has devastated many, but we'll continue to remember him for years to come.
That's Fisayo Dairo, the chief football writer at ACLSports.com.
Sporty greetings. This is Fisayo Dairo, chief football writer at ACLSports.com, and you are listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America.
The International Basketball Federation, FIBA, has lifted a four-year suspension of Liberia, and now Liberia's top basketball official is urging FIBA to help the country get back to international competition. Iron Mike Mbonye reports from Lagos.
World Governing Body of Basketball, FIBA, has approved the election of a new executive of Liberian Basketball Association. The association has been on suspension for 4 years for not following rules and regulations of FIBA to conduct election of its executive. Abraham Samukai is the newly elected president of Liberian Basketball Association. Samukai, who spoke to VOA on phone from New Jersey, USA, says FIBA officials observed the election of the new executive of the association. He says the association's priority is to seek assistance of FIBA to get the country back to the game.
The priority for us at this point, of course, is getting back the coaches, the players and stakeholders to see how we can reorganize and put our acts together. And in so doing, you know, we have been out for 4 years. Will we going to FIBA to come to our aid to make sure we can get assistance? Because we need assistance, technical assistance. We need coaches. We got to train our boys. We need coaches to, and we need trainers to train the referees to make sure we are on par with other countries. So we'll be knocking at the doors of FIBA Africa, especially through Zone 3, to come for assistance and make sure we make Liberia again on par with other African countries.
Samukai appealed to basketball stakeholders to join the new executive in reviving the game and ensure that the country is at par with sister African countries.
So my message is mostly to the stakeholders, don't be discouraged. It's been a long time, but we need to put the team back together. To the players, I say sorry for the delay. Come and practice, train well, and we'll be able to put Liberia on the map again. To all the technical, the statistician, we all need to have all hands on deck to make sure that we can carry Liberia forward and then become a member of the community of nations where we can go on par again and be able to play basketball in the best interest of our country.
Colonel Sam Amedu, retired president of FIBA Africa Zone 3, confirmed that the World Governing Body of Basketball has approved the election of Liberia's new executive. He advised the new executive to integrate the country into FIBA activities.
We'll expect the new executive to reintegrate the Liberian basketball family back to the FIBA fold as quickly as possible. That is by attending competitions, attending meetings, and also continue to brief FIBA on the activities of what is happening in their own country. So, and I can assure you that so far, there is no indication that they intend to do anything different from that. So I say welcome to Liberia.
Amedu says the Liberian basketball executive should carry stakeholders along, especially those who contested election with members of the new executive. For the Sunny Side of Sports, this is Ayo Mike Bonye in Lagos.
Sporting greetings. This is Ibrahim Samukai, president of Liberian Basketball Association. You are listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America.
Turning to tennis, Canada has lifted the Billie Jean King Cup trophy in Seville, Spain, as we hear now from Craig Gabriel.
The Billie Jean King Cup was previously known as the Fed Cup and is the women's equivalent of the men's Davis Cup. And it's the biggest women's team sporting tournament in the world. And there's a new nation on the 60-year-old trophy. Canada has won the event for the first time, and they've become the 13th different nation to claim the prize. It's also the second consecutive year that a new nation has been inscribed on the cup. Last year, it was Switzerland. This marked the first time the Canadians had reached the final, and they defeated Italy by winning the two singles matches. Italy last played the final in 2013, and they won it that year. For the Canadian women, this is a case of emulating their male compatriots who won the Davis Cup last year. In the first of the singles matches, 18-year-old Marina Stakusic defeated the experienced Martina Trevisan 7-5, 6-3 in 1 hour 47 minutes. Trevisan staged a rally in the first set, and had she won that set, it may have been a different result. She just was not able to finish things off, as the teenager closed it out after having a racket bag full of match points. This was probably the crucial match of the final, and it was a must-win for Italy. Leila Fernandez, the former US Open finalist, has been incredibly strong all tournament, and she overcame Jasmine Paolini 6-2, 6-3 in 1 hour 39 minutes to seal the victory. That's made Fernandez the joint third winningest Canadian in singles in the competition's history. This marked the fourth time from five encounters that Canada has beaten Italy, and the second year in a row at the Billie Jean King Cup. Craig Gabriel, VOA Sports.
Thanks, Craig. Despite the loss in the final, Italian captain Tatiana Garbin says she's very proud of her team.
Well, it was a very emotional week. We had a great time right here in Seville. Our team is very close, and I'm so proud of my player again, I have to say, because not just as the players, but as human being, because I know them, all of them, since they were very young, and they grow up so much, and they are sensitive person, and they stay with me in the tough moment, so I'm so proud.
Still with tennis, former world number one Naomi Osaka of Japan is planning to end a 15-month break and play at the Brisbane International Tournament in Australia in January. The 26-year-old Osaka gave birth to a baby daughter, Shai, in July this year. Brisbane International Tournament director Cameron Pearson is excited about Osaka's return.
For the first time returning after her hiatus, having a baby, coming back for the first time as a mum will be Naomi Osaka, who has Grand Slam champion but also a former world number one, and it's great to see Naomi back on the court. Yeah, look, Naomi was always wanting to come back, and you know, she targeted the Australian summer as her starting point. So, you know, it's a natural progression for her to play here in Brisbane. You know, she's played here before. She knows the conditions. She knows the stadium. She knows she's going to optimise her preparation for Melbourne. So it was an easy conversation, but I'm thrilled that she's coming back.
The Brisbane International is scheduled from December 31st to January 7th in Australia. And the year's first Grand Slam event, the Australian Open, begins the following week in Melbourne on January 14th. Serbian star Novak Djokovic will be defending his title at the 2024 Australian Open. It's been another great year for Djokovic. He won the Australian Open, the French Open, and the U.S. Open in 2023. And after winning his opening match at the ATP Finals in Turin, Italy, Djokovic is guaranteed of ending the year as the world's number one ranked player.
Yeah, it's huge. It means a lot, obviously. I knew that coming into the tournament here, I needed only one win to clinch the year-end number one, and I really wanted that to happen already tonight. I didn't want to prolong in a way the situation and complicate in a way this particular goal. So I'm really glad that I managed to do that tonight. It's always has been a huge objective and huge goal of mine, you know, to be number one in the world. Other than Grand Slams, that's what counts the most. And to finish off the year as number one in the world at this stage of my life and career is something really amazing. At the beginning of the year, I really wasn't prioritizing that, I must say. You know, I was prioritizing more Grand Slams. And because of the great results, particularly in Grand Slams and accumulated points, I think I put myself in a very good position to fight for year number one. And winning Paris, you know, put me in a great position. So I really went for it. So, you know, anything that happens from this moment onwards, I guess, in this tournament is a bonus for me.
Serbian tennis star Novak Djokovic speaking in Turin, Italy. And that wraps up the November 13th edition of the show. Thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA's Sonny Young in Washington, and that's the sunny side of sports.
I get it.